You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
The Pride Parade is canceled. New York, San Francisco, Chicago. I'll join the list of cities canceling the Pride parades. But greed, envy, wrath, sloth, and gluttony were all on parade this weekend in Lansing, Michigan, Denver, Colorado, Austin, Texas, Olympia, Washington. People, mostly white, all dumb, took to the streets to call for the reopening of America. These protests, as the Washington Post reports, are being pushed by pro-gun activists. That's why you saw so many assault rifles in the photos of these protests. Assault rifles, Confederate flags, swastikas, you know, the haters who are in love with death, other people's deaths, not their own deaths, were all out there humping death's leg this weekend. We'll check back in with them in a couple of weeks to see how that worked out for them. Anyway, I don't want to give these astroturfed protests more attention than they deserve. The numbers of people at this weekend's greed, envy, anger, sloth, and gluttony parades were small because the overwhelming majority of Americans support efforts to flatten the curve and are staying home to protect themselves, their loved ones, and their communities. So instead of turning the entire intro over to these assholes this weekend, I wanted to give a shout out to a couple of groups of people that were on my mind this morning. First, to the eventosexuals. I'm thinking of all the people out there who regularly attend big events, sometimes annual events like IML in Chicago or DomCom in LA, the straight swingers who go to big retreats every year, the people whose sex lives revolve around play parties. The more niche a person's sexual interests are, or the more isolated an individual kinkster is, the more important these kinds of events become. Think of the gay leather guy who lives in a small rural town, or the swinging straight couple that lives in the suburbs. And while from the outside these events can look like just so much fucking around, I have been to enough of them to know that people get more than sex out of these events. People find community there. Community and connection and friendship and intimacy and, yes, sex. There are a lot of eventosexuals out there who don't know when they're going to see their friends and lovers again, and we feel for you. Also wanted to give a shout out to another group of people that I've overlooked. We usually run response calls at the end of the show, but this week we're going to make an exception.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling to comment on your April 14th show. On the 14th show, you treated us to a long discussion of how much you love using marijuana at home, and then you advised people to put down the Budweiser and pick up the bud. And Dan, I support your right to get as high as you want, and that's beautiful. But I'm just going to ask you for a little bit of love for the many, many people who listen to your show who have struggled with addiction and who are really, really working hard to stay clean during this pandemic. It's really hard for a lot of us with the isolation. So just if you could just give us a little love, that would be very meaningful. Thank you so much for all you do.
Like I said at the top of last week's show, people are drinking, people are using more pot, also watching more porn. We talked about that at the top of the show last week. So long as you're keeping it together, I think if you need a bit more booze or pot right now to get through the day, that's fine. But those of us who are capable of using in moderation, and those of us who may be using a little bit more right now, we need to remember the people in our lives who may be struggling to stay sober. We need to show them our love and support, and we need to always remember that the ability to use drugs or alcohol in moderation doesn't make anyone morally superior, just genetically lucky. We've been encouraging people to reach out, to maintain physical distance while strengthening social connections. And one important way we can be there for our friends who are sober, particularly anyone we know who only recently went into recovery, is to make time for them when we are sober. Very grateful to you, caller, for the reminder and the prompt, because I do want everyone out there who listens to the show, who is sober, however long you've been sober or only recently sober, to know you have our love and support. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and joining us in the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, divorce attorney Lori Lopez Guzzo, here to talk with an individual caller about her case, but also to talk about divorce post-COVID lockdown. All that coming up on today's show. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to thredup.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's thredup.com/savage. thredup.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. All the pre-portioned ingredients you need to make fabulous meals delivered straight to your home. Check it out at blueapron.com. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by DoorDash. Get $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter the promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling with a quarantine sex story from Spain. As you know, the situation has been pretty tough here, and I've been really down, stuck in the flat with my partner, and we weren't really having too much sex. In the beginning we were, and then it kind of fizzled out until we invented strip ping pong. So we had some ping pong rackets and a ping pong ball and set it up on our dinner table and played like a best out of 15 rounds. And if you win, the other person has to take off one item of clothing. Anyways, it was really fun. I recommend it.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your quarantine sex story. We're opening every week's Lovecast for the time being with people's quarantine sex stories, how you are taking some of this time when you're forced to be at home and turning it into sexy time at home. Give us a call. Share your quarantine sex story. We may open next week's podcast with yours.
Hey, Dan, I have a question for you. So every guy I've been with till now is really possessive or wanting me to be the only one and for them to be the only one that we sleep with. And this guy I'm seeing now, he's into me being with other dudes and DPing and things like this. And it actually does really turn me on. But I'm just wondering if you have any advice to get into this slowly. Yeah, or if you have any thoughts if this means anything for the way he views me, or I guess like there's a fear that he doesn't see my body as a temple or something like this, and there's like fear behind him wanting to share me. So yeah, I just wanted to hear your thoughts on the matter.
The standard advice when someone is dating a guy who is interested in that person, whether it's a girlfriend or a boyfriend, being with other people, being with other men, is to take it slow, to take baby steps. Well, welcome to the pandemic where you are forced to take it slow, where you can't even take that first baby step for a while, which is going to give you plenty of time to talk about this with your partner and drill down on what it is that turns him on about it. Is he into hot wifing or hot girlfriending? Is it just that he wants to see other guys or know that other guys are enjoying you and it turns him on to know that you turn other guys on too? Is he into cuckolding? Is this an eroticized insecurity where he wants to be degraded or feel humiliated by you being with other guys? The cuckolding play is a little bit more emotionally tricky. And the reason why we encourage people to take this very slowly is you can't know for sure how you're going to react the first time your partner, if you've only ever been in monogamous relationships in the past, is with someone else. There are plenty of people out there who fantasize about their wives or girlfriends being with other men, really turned on about it. They dirty talk about it. They get their girlfriends or wives on board. Their girlfriends or wives are excited about finally doing it. They do it. And the guy has a meltdown, which is why you don't go 0 to 60. You don't swing for the fences that first time. So you don't go for full intercourse the first time. You don't go for an overnight the first time. You go out with your boyfriend. Maybe you flirt with other guys in front of him. Let other guys buy you drinks in front of him once we have bars again. And let him see how that feels and check in with him. Maybe you make out with somebody else on a dance floor. Maybe you have a hookup with an old flame. And there's no intercourse, no oral or vaginal penetration or anal penetration. They're going to roll around a little bit, make out. And then your boyfriend is going to watch, or does he want to see pictures, or does he just want to hear about it? Does he want to be there? Does he not want to be there? There's a lot to discuss before you actually act on this. And you have plenty of time to discuss this before you can act on it. And the questions you have, how does he view you? Those are questions that he needs to wrestle with to your satisfaction, answer to your satisfaction, provide you with the assurances that you need. It's not his desire to see you with other people or know that you've been with other people doesn't mean necessarily that he doesn't regard your body as a temple. He just doesn't want to be the only worshiper. So have a long talk with the boyfriend. You have plenty of time to have that talk with the boyfriend about what this means to him and what he wants out of it. Particularly important, again, to drill down on whether or not he has done this before, or if this is going to be not just a new experience for you, but also a new experience for him. And, you know, just on the face of it, when you think about being with a guy who is possessive, as the guys that you've been with before have been, and maybe jealous and controlling, and you contrast that with being with somebody who is seemingly not so possessive, seemingly not so controlling, because he wants to share you with other guys. Well, that itself can be a form of possession, of owning you and controlling you. If it's about him deciding who it is that you get to be with, if he regards you as his property to share, if he approaches this as if he's lending some other dude his tricked out car and sees you as an object that's going to increase his, I guess, social status because he can share you, that could be problematic. That could be a bad sign. You want to make sure this is coming from a place of abundance and joy, not just a kind of photonegative mirror image possessiveness.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm going to try to make this short. So about a year ago, I hooked up with my best friend, and it was right before she got into a serious relationship. And while she was in this relationship, her and I were always very flirty with each other. Backstory, we've known each other forever and ever and have always been very attracted to each other. So about half a year into this relationship with this guy, we ended up having a threesome, which didn't really go very well. Everyone kind of got some hurt feelings and we all backed off. Since then, her and I had discussed having a relationship, you know, alongside of their relationship. She had told me that things with them were open maybe, but had never been very clear about it. And then today she called me. She's quarantining with him and her family. And she called me and he was on the phone and we were on FaceTime and he was accusing her of lying about when we hooked up. And she was trying to get me to answer like when the last time we hooked up was. And he was screaming at her and at me and saying things like, why are you trying to fuck my girlfriend? It was crazy and horrible. And I don't know. Is there something I need to be doing? Should I just stay out of it? It seems like it's more about what she didn't tell him than what was going on with us. The communication has never been good there. So should I stay out of it or get more involved?
Yeah, you're going to want to stay out of this. You're also going to want to encourage your friend to get out of this, to get away from this raging, controlling, jealous, possessive asshole of a boyfriend. I'm sure the threesome was, if not his idea, a proposal that he was psyched about, and it didn't go well. Here you have a case where somebody watches their partner get with somebody else and has this unexpected emotional reaction, a negative reaction. And it sure sounds like ever since the threesome, this guy has been punishing his girlfriend for the threesome that didn't go well, for, you know, taking out his rage on her. And has probably pressed her for information about your relationship with her. Obviously, he's jealous about whatever he witnessed passing between you, whatever electricity or sexual connection, erotic ties there were between you. And he's insecure and controlling and jealous. And he sounds potentially violent. One of the things that we're seeing during this lockdown, as many of us are sheltering in place, distressingly and upsettingly, is a huge spike in domestic violence. And abusers take advantage. They leverage whatever they can in their campaign of abuse, abuse of their target, their wife or their kids, whoever it is that the abuser, or sometimes the husband, whoever it is that the abuser is targeting. And your friend sounds very vulnerable right now. If at this moment, when they are trapped at home together, this is what they're doing, they're processing a three-way that didn't go perfectly, that didn't go well months ago, however long ago, and getting on the phone and you are, and he is raging at her and screaming at her while you're not quite in the room, but able to see what's going on in the room. Imagine what he's doing when there's no one around. I'm very concerned for your friend. I would encourage you to stay the fuck out of it, out of their drama, whatever's going on between them, but reach out to her. Ask her if she's okay. Ask her if it isn't just shouting, if it isn't just verbal abuse, if she feels unsafe, if he's hit her, and then help her, if you can, make a plan to find somewhere else to shelter in place and get away from this motherfucker. And if need be, call the fucking cops.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy at Rescue. Longtime Magnum subscriber, first-time caller here. I'm calling for advice on my mentality with my partner. He and I have been together just shy of 2 years. For the most part, we have a loving, communicative relationship. I suffer from mental illness, and he's been an amazing support to me with this. His methods of reassurance are thoughtful and kind, and we both actively support each other in our creative goals. I struggle with executive dysfunction, and he often helps me through this, which means since we've been together, I've seen more progress than ever with every goal I've set for myself because he helps me not back down. We rarely argue and have a ton of common interests and a great balance between our relationship and our individual lives. Here's the problem. He works at a popular nightclub in our city and is very attractive. He is constantly being propositioned by women that come through the venue and often indulges text flirting or sometimes one-night stands with them. This is not the issue. I'm comfortable with my partner having sexual autonomy. My issue is despite many, many conversations around this and my reassurance that this is not an issue for me, he lies about and hides these interactions. This gives me concerns about sexual health and safety, and it's also deeply hurtful and confusing because I've tried very hard to establish an open line of communication around this. I never approached the topic with anger, so the refusal to be candid about these experiences in lieu of getting caught makes no sense to me. I learned today that up until right before quarantine, he was still meeting up with some of these women for sex. We don't live together, but he's been staying with me during this time. I plan on confronting this discovery later tonight. It seems clear to me that full disclosure is just not going to be a realistic expectation, and while I plan on digging in to see if we can find out why this is such an issue for him, again, I also intend to surface that I may be able to consent to a DATT agreement to accommodate this behavior, since I feel it's clear he gets something not only out of the sex, but out of hiding it. Am I crazy? Am I letting myself get totally walked all over? Is it possible he genuinely cares for me while acting this way? Another layer to this whole thing is that for whatever reason, this behavior turns me on like nothing else. I love fantasizing about him with other women, and we've even played around with other people before, which I was very into, so the avoidance on having this conversation is just mind-blowing to me within a dynamic that is otherwise so extremely considerate and supportive. What do I do, Dan?
He's hiding things from you that he doesn't need to hide from you. He's hiding things from you that would turn you on. He has sex with other women. He flirts with other women. Obviously, there's something in that for him. He gets to have sex with these other women. He gets to be pursued. He feels attractive. He feels affirmed. He's having tons of sex. He's getting off. And it's galling to you and angering that there could be something in that for you too. If he told you about it, you would be getting off on it because it turns you on to know that he's been with other women. Obviously, the disconnect here, the little tiny bit of sexual incompatibility here is you say you respect his sexual autonomy and he seemingly needs some privacy. It may be that having a secret and particularly keeping those secrets from you turns him on. Well, keeping the secrets not only deprives you of what would arouse you to know about, but angers you because the keeping of the secret feels unnecessary to you. But it feels unnecessary to you because the only reason you see that's rational to keep the secret would be if you reacted with anger or jealousy or tried to prevent him from sleeping with other women. That's not your desire or intent. Indeed, it turns you on when he's with other women. What you have to recognize is it turns him on not to necessarily keep this from you in particular, but to keep it from everyone, to get away with this, to do these things without everyone knowing about it, to have this zone of not just sexual autonomy, but total privacy. There is a fix. And I've talked about these friends on the show before, the gay couple where one, you know, liked to sleep around, but it turned him on to have a secret. It turned him on to get away with things. And the compromise that they hammered out, and it's worked for them. Now they're married. They've been together for years. I've been talking about them on the show for a very long time. What they worked out was he could do what he needs to do, fuck around, have his secrets, you know, lie about where he is sometimes, which he was doing so that he could go have an assignation. But then every once in a while, they have a sit down where they have a bottle of champagne and they just spill. He tells his boyfriend everything, now husband everything, and the now husband jacks off and they roll around and there's something in it for the husband. Maybe that's the compromise that you can work out. You don't need to know. every detail, when it's happening, as it's happening, or immediately after it happened. But every once in a while, because this is a turn on for you to know that he's with other women and he needs a girlfriend like you, obviously. You're the best possible girlfriend for him. Every once in a while, there needs to be something in all of this for you. And that is a night with him where he tells you some of his dirty stories, shares his sexual adventures with you, allows you to get off hearing about them. You are a cuck queen. You are a rare thing. He should be so psyched that he found you without looking for you, because you are the ideal potential girlfriend for him, long-term committed partner for him. If he can just move a little bit, if you can both move a little bit, you would like to know everything right away. Obviously, that's not going to happen. He obviously would like to possibly not share anything with you ever. The compromise is you don't know everything right away, but you know most of it every once in a while because you have these share sessions that will be probably intensely erotic for you. And he gets to, you know, operate with some privacy, with some autonomy in the moment, knowing he's putting these things in a spank bank for you for later. All right, you're staying home. Maybe you're a little bored with your wardrobe. That's why now is the best time to try ThredUp. It is so easy to use, and new stuff arrives every hour at ThredUp, so there's always something fresh to see, and you can do it safely and easily from home. ThredUp is the world's largest online thrift store with up to 90% off estimated retail. At ThredUp, you get the insane deals of thrifting with the convenience and safety of online shopping, and you get it from all your favorite brands. You can score Nike from $5, J.Crew or American Eagle starting at $6, plus thousands of other brands, all for a fraction of the price. And you today can get an extra 30% off your first order at thredup.com/savage. Get yourself a closet full of new clothes without ever having to leave the house. Again, with new arrivals at ThredUp every minute, there's always something new to discover at thredup.com. Shop online at thredup.com and customize your search by size, style, and budget to find all the best deals instantly. It's so easy. Get items in high-quality condition. Some even come with their original tags still on them, all delivered right to your door. Nancy, right now, is flouncing around in her fancy new blouse, and she says she scored some great leggings for her teenage daughter at thredup.com, too. Get the styles you love for a fraction of the price. Do your thrifting without leaving the house. You'll look good. You'll feel good. It's good for the environment. So much good at thredup.com. And for Savage Lovecast listeners, here's an exclusive offer again just for you. Get an extra 30% off your first order at thredup.com/savage. That's thredup.com/savage. For an extra 30% off your first order. ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm a 29-year-old gay guy calling from the East Coast. With all my extra time being cooped up at home, I've had plenty of extra time to play on my phone a lot. And I have a question for you regarding conversation and picture etiquette on hookup apps. Here's the backstory. A few months ago, I was in a group with three other guys. We all have a nice time, but we haven't met up since. One of the guys messaged me last night just to say hi, and then the topic of our group came up. He said that he wished that he and I had more time together, one-on-one, and he asked if I found him attractive or would want to do it again. I said that I definitely had fun, but was thrown off because he looked different from the pictures he presented. He pressed what I meant and asked for the specifics, and I eventually said that he was thinner in the pictures he sent than he was in real life. He definitely did not like that comment, and we proceeded to get into a longer discussion. He eventually pressed that I was being fatphobic and a, quote, typical white gay with one model of queerness. He said that his pictures were sent because they were the ones that he felt best in, and I shouldn't make myself a victim because I perceived him to be different from what his real life self was. The crux of my argument to him was that it wasn't the type of disparity I noticed, but the fact that there was one in the first place. I said that honestly portraying ourselves was really important in hookups because it adds to the comfort level for everybody. I said the picture could have been 10 years old, a picture with him with braces, or a brand new shaved head. And I also brought up the fact that there were other larger guys in the group when we all hooked up. To be honest, I actually co-signed everything he said about negative body image and fat phobia with gay men. I agreed with him, and I told him that. But towards the end, I felt like we were having two different conversations, and he wasn't understanding my point. Was I an asshole for bringing up the specific difference I saw in his pictures in the first place? Or did I have a right to feel weird about the discrepancy between his body and his pictures that he sent in regards to his size?
So he felt best in the photos, or best about the photos, that made him look slimmer than he actually is right now. And you're the fatphobic one, or the only fatphobic one on the call? Isn't he demonstrating a kind of fat phobia there by preferring the pictures that misrepresent his body type? I would say, yeah. I would say that he's buying into the very, you know, gay fat phobic shit that he's complaining to you about. And you didn't say that you didn't find him attractive, and there were other bigger guys at this group sex event that you attended, that you played with, that you found attractive. It wasn't about his size. It was about the fact that he was being a little manipulative and dishonest. He was misrepresenting himself, and that made you uncomfortable. And he pressed you on what that misrepresentation was, and pressed you, and you told him. And so, no, I don't think you're being fat phobic. I do know that fat phobia is a problem out there in the gay community. I've been accused of it myself. There's a new study out that finds that there's a lot of fat phobia, of course, in gay land that sloshes around. Gay men have eating disorders, bigorexia, anorexia, bulimia at rates similar to women, because gay men are sex objects who are viewed by men. We're subjected to that hypercritical male gaze too, and that competitiveness. It's even magnified in gay male sex culture and communities. But I don't think this is an example of it. What your issue with him was the dishonesty. And that made you uncomfortable. And you were less attracted to him, not because he was larger. There were other larger guys at this event that you were attracted to, that you spent more time with than you spent with him. He saw you interacting sexually with other bigger guys. You were less attracted to him, not because he's a bigger guy, but because he's a guy who basically lied to you with a photograph. And that made you uncomfortable. And he doesn't want to take responsibility for his own actions. He wants to shift the conversation to your bad character and accuse you of being a fatphobe, which you are not. Spend not one more minute wringing your hands about this. You barely know this guy. You don't have to see him again, and you don't owe him anything. You don't particularly owe him crawling up there on that cross. Crawl down. Home cooking matters now more than ever, and with Blue Apron, you can have peace of mind by getting fresh quality ingredients delivered straight to your door, all of them that you need, so you can cook delicious, easy meals in the comfort of your home. Blue Apron takes the guesswork out of dinner, also removes from your day a run to the grocery store, and you can know your ingredients are being prepared and packaged with the highest attention to quality and safety. And with a commitment to transparency and reducing waste, Blue Apron has your back in more ways than one. We're big fans of Blue Apron at my house. As I've said before, Blue Apron taught me how to cook. I was a hopeless cook. I could make toast and I could boil water, which meant I could make tea and boil some eggs. That was the extent of my kitchen aptitude until Blue Apron came along. We were getting boxes. Terry, who's a great cook, was cooking up the Blue Apron meals for us. Then he got sick and I had to cook up the Blue Aprons for us. And no one was more shocked than I, except perhaps Terry, that I could do it following their step-by-step instruction cards. It was easy and it gave me kitchen confidence. With Blue Apron, you choose from a variety of chef-designed, ready-to-cook meals with perfectly portioned ingredients, lots of flavorful options, all sent to your door, and you too can acquire the kitchen confidence that maybe you don't have right now. Prices start as low as $7.49 per serving. It's flexible. You can skip weeks. You can cancel at any time. I love that Blue Apron takes care of meal planning for us so that we can kick back and not have to worry about it. All their meals can be prepared in 40 minutes or less, some as low as 20 minutes. It really is like bringing the restaurant home. Even if there's no occasion, it's affordable and a more personal way to make any meal feel special. And listen to this, over 85% of Blue Apron packaging is recyclable, and 41% of their packaging materials are made from recycled content. They're also the first meal kit company to transition to drain-safe, fully recyclable ice packs. Feel good about your choices. Create delicious meals at home with Blue Apron. Find comfort in the kitchen with Blue Apron and enjoy delicious home-cooked meals. Check out this week's menu and visit blueapron.com. That's blueapron.com. Blue Apron, feed your soul.
Hey, Dan. So a friend of mine in a very, very, very close circle of friends, he's deeply, deeply, deeply closeted. Last night, he started aggressively propositioning me via text, including an unsolicited dick pic. He was hammered. He is clean and sober up until last night. He relapsed, being very, very aggressive about it. I'm not interested at all. I'm queer, but I'm not interested. I let him down very, very gently. I tried to, but he wouldn't take no for an answer. Couple issues here. This guy is an ex-cop. He's deeply, deeply involved in politics. This guy is powerful. And I was really a little bit scared because this dude could be dangerous. And I actually got a little bit scared. And on a side note, I truly understood what women go through, because I've been propositioned by a woman before, by men, and I was able to laugh it off. But this time, this is fucking scary. So I think I finally got a lot of perspective on that, which I'm grateful for. But with my issue here, I don't know what to do. I mean, I'm trying to let this guy down very gently, but the larger issue is, what do me and or my friends do? I mean, do I just let him sober up and let him pretend this never happened? Is it my responsibility to, now that he's basically come out to me, to have a conversation with him about being in the closet, because I know he's going to try to act like everything never happened? Or is that just none of my fucking business? I don't know what to do. And I'm still a little bit freaked out. Like, what if this dude does this again? Because he is very powerful and he is dangerous.
Hey, I had a question for you. This powerful and dangerous, angry guy, why is he your friend? Why is he embedded in your friend circle? Why do your other friends like this guy?
Well, we all are kind of connected because we're all in recovery. We're all, you know, recovering addicts, alcoholics, but we're not. I always feel I need to tell people we're not evangelical about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It just doesn't work for us.
There's a connection there, maybe not a friendship, but there's been some mutual support that's flowed between all of you guys in maintaining your sobriety. So it's a different kind of connection and relationship.
Yes, absolutely. And there's never been any kind of, he's always been, you know, respectful and friendly. So it just, there's never been an issue before.
But Billy, add alcohol. There's obviously a reason why this guy needs to stay sober.
Yes.
And yeah, that it's really distressing. And what you're right to say that you left this experience with some appreciation for what women go through and also what they do. You know, women often are put in a position where they have to reject someone without angering him because they fear how the guy will react if he is angered by the rejection. And so what you were doing was that de-escalating technique that a lot of women use to extricate themselves from a situation where, you know, they don't want to have sex with this person. They don't want to consent to sex. They don't want to have to, you know, avoid a confrontation, but they also don't want to provoke that person because men are testosterone-soaked dick monsters and are scary and sometimes violent, and women are right to be afraid. And I think in this circumstance, you're right to be afraid of this guy, because it's not just that he's hitting on you, but he's also a closet case. And sometimes that closet case, those closet cases, and there were a lot more of them around when I was in my 20s that you would sometimes run across, where they want to fuck you, but they hate you because and blame you for the fact that they want to fuck you, that they're angry at you and they desire you, but you're the responsible party. It's your attractiveness to making them feel these things that they don't want to feel. And a guy, you know, we used to talk, you know, there used to be a lot of talk in the gay community about guys who would have sex with you and then beat you up. You know, the moment they came and it wasn't a kind of getting beat up that you enjoyed or asked for, it wasn't consensual, it wasn't power play, it was anger. And it was really dangerous to sleep sometimes with a conflicted closet case because you didn't know how they were going to react or process it the minute they came, and those post-orgasmic regrets washed over them, and the implications washed over them once their dicks weren't hard anymore. And it was a dangerous game to play, you know. And I remember friends, you know, 40 years ago when I was a gay teenager who slept with closeted cops and then got beat up by that closeted cop.
Jesus.
So, you know, your question is basically, is it your responsibility to have a convo with him? I think that increases the danger for you. The more you become, you know, the focus of this, not just, you know, someone that he desires, but someone who's confronting him about his desires and making them think about them, when he's sober, the likely you are to become a target. You don't have a responsibility to this random, basically, closet case that you've come to know for a reason that's not entirely about friendship, although you have formed a friendship. You aren't responsible for him. And I would, if I were in your position, I would minimize my contact with him while saving that conversation, saving screen grabs of that entire conversation in case he ever accuses you of anything or, you know, blames you, you know, says if there ever is a confrontation, if he ever brings it up, he blames you for hitting on him. You can prove that, no, this was you hitting on me. But it's not a conversation where there's a lot of upsides for you. If this was somebody who wasn't scary, somebody who wasn't dangerous, somebody who wasn't violent, and they were closeted and conflicted and it hit on you and you felt safe drawing them out and having that conversation, that's a mitzvah. That's God's work. And I think, you know, we've all done that. And I think the younger you are as a gay person and the more recently you've been out, the likely you are to encounter someone like that who is, you know, still struggling at 22 when you've been out for 5 years at 22. And they're attracted to you and they hit on you. And then, you know, if you feel safe with that person, you know, often gay people are put in a position where someone is hitting on them who's not out. And sometimes you can have that conversation and you can really help that person accept themselves in part by modeling self-acceptance. But the word that I keep bumping on in your question is, do you have a responsibility in this instance? You don't have a responsibility, particularly in this instance. You don't have a responsibility when you're 22 and you don't feel threatened and you think the guy's a nice guy. You still don't have a responsibility. It's a mitzvah. It's a good deed. It's God's work, gay God's work. But it's not your responsibility. And if you feel in any way that it makes you unsafe or more of a target for his rage to have this conversation with him, don't. You aren't obligated. You do not have a responsibility.
Okay.
I'm sorry this happened. But you know, in a way, I'm not sorry it happened. I wish men everywhere were sensitized to what women go through. And I think gay men sometimes are more sensitized to it, and queer men and gay men more sensitized to it because, you know, we often sleep with other men and we know how men can be and we have to be careful. We aren't men like in that way, in that toxic way. And it can really open our eyes, not just to be on the receiving end of that experience, but sometimes to, you know, be hitting on someone and realize, oh, they're using de-escalation techniques with me. They're afraid of me right now. But you have to be sensitive to it in both directions because there's this game in like queer male land where you want to be like kind of aggressive because that's kind of a turn on. And then that can also be a trap where you bumble into being aggressive in a way where you're not intending to make someone feel afraid of you, but you are having that effect on someone. And we always have to be sensitive to that, you know, we may be misperceived in that way or not, unaware we're being perceived in that way.
Yeah. You know, it really made me, it was such an eye opener. Like I said in the call, I've been hit on many times by men and women that, you know, I didn't want to reciprocate, but, it was, I'm almost grateful for it because it kind of was a revelation. It did make me start to think about the times where I had, you know, I had been hitting on someone and they gave, you know, the response, I wasn't sure how to read because they weren't exactly reciprocating it, but
they weren't saying no, you know, but they weren't saying yes. And that's a no. That's what we, it has to be our setting. Our, you know, that's where we have to go. If it's ambiguous, it's a no, because there are a lot of people who give us an ambiguous response because they fear us or they have this conditioned fear response. And it may not be anything we're doing in that moment to make them afraid of us that we're not consciously doing in that moment to make them afraid of us. It just may be the way they react when someone hits on them, where they have a hard time saying no, particularly women, but also like gay guys I've encountered. And it took me some time myself to learn that, you know, if somebody wanted to fuck me, they were usually pretty clear about that if I asked.
True.
There wasn't a lot of hemming and hawing, particularly from other men. Not a lot of hemming and hawing.
True.
And, you know, a hem and a haw, rejection sucks, and we want to avoid it almost at all costs. So our egos will, to preserve themselves and protect themselves, will interpret a hemming and a hawing as, you know, a maybe and, you know, a potential yes if I just keep asking or if I ask it a different way or ask a different thing. And we have to unlearn that. And we have to, like I talk on the show a lot about, embrace rejection. Rejection's good for us because the sooner someone who doesn't want to be with you rejects you, the sooner you're going to be in bed with someone who wants to be in bed with you. And that's going to be much better for everybody, particularly the person if they only consented to sex with you to because they feared the consequences that they didn't consent or just wanted to shut you up or just wanted to avoid conflict,
right.
even if they weren't in fear. That's never good sex for the person who's consenting under duress or consenting to shut you up. And it's also rarely good sex. And I think it can do damage to the person who's the other person in that interaction. It's not good for anybody.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
I'm sorry this happened
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
And it's scary. And protect yourself. And maybe what the one thing that you can do and no responsibility is to reach out to some other people in the group who can reach
okay.
out to him. You know, if you know his
okay.
sponsor, to like nudge his sponsor, maybe he needs a call without mentioning why or what happened.
Okay.
Don't out him.
Right, right. I was assuming, you know, I should err on the side of not outing him, but just you've made me feel so validated. And I didn't realize until you were telling me to avoid the conversation how much it was kind of tearing me up, how conflicted I was about it. And it's a big burden off my shoulders to hear you say that you're sorry and that it's okay to avoid them.
Yes, it is absolutely okay. Your first responsibility or your only responsibility in this instance is to protect yourself.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay.
Those of us who are lucky enough to still have jobs can help save other people's jobs in the restaurant industry by supporting and ordering from restaurants in your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. Support your favorite restaurants and favorite restaurant workers on DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos, or you can choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left for you at your door. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep your community safe. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more and zero delivery fees for your first month when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code SAVAGE. That's $5 off your first order and zero delivery fees for an entire month when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store. And remember to enter the code SAVAGE. Don't forget to use the code SAVAGE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
Hi, I am a woman in her mid-20s, mostly straight. I'm single and I feel like the quarantine and COVID and everything is making me feel so alone, even though I have a great family and great roommates and things like that. But I think I just keep, it makes just me feel so lonely seeing other people with their significant others. And I think what I need to hear is just like there's still time, that this won't last forever, and that I still have time to like find somebody and start a family and things like that, and that this just won't last forever. Because right now I just feel like it will go on forever and I've run out of time and I'm not gonna find like a person to spend my life with, and it's just over for me. So if there's any reassurance you can give to somebody in my situation, I'd be very grateful.
It's odd what I'm about to say. I'm a little self-conscious about it. But you know what I am constantly reassured by? My dining room table. Every day when I sit down and have breakfast and write the Savage Love letter of the day in the middle of the afternoon, I sit at my dining room table. And my dining room table was originally my great-grandparents' dining room table. It's like 120 years old or something, and I got the dining room set. It had become, after my great-grandparents owned it, it was in their dining room, it was in my grandparents' dining room, then it was in my parents' dining room, and now it is in my dining room. And the reason this dining room table reassures me every time I sit down at it is because it was in my great-grandparents' dining room in 1918. Because three of my aunts, who were very sick, the entire family was very sick, during the Spanish flu epidemic, basically recovered on that table. They were laid out on that table, three of them stacked side by side because there weren't enough beds in the house. Sick relatives had come home and the house was full. And luckily, everybody in my family at that time, 100 plus years ago, survived the Spanish flu. And three of the people who survived it in my family, three of my great aunts, survived it on that dining room table. And so I'm sure at that time, because there were waves of Spanish flu, there was a first wave and a second wave, I believe there was a third wave. At that time, it felt like it would never end. And it ended. So please know that we are going to come out on the other side of this, that a vaccine will be developed, a treatment will be developed. We will figure this out. Scientists and researchers all over the world are working on this to the exclusion of basically all else, because this is an all hands on deck emergency. Some of the worst case predictions that I've read are this could go on for 12 months, 18 months, 24 months tops. And that seems like an eternity, I realize, but they're not talking about 24 months of social isolation. They're talking about people being tested, people figuring out who's already had it, who has immunity, gradually lifting these restrictions and allowing people to get out of the house again and gather in smaller groups again. So this current phase of social isolation, of physical distancing, isn't going to go on forever. I know when you're in the middle of an emergency like this, it feels like it will never stop. And I look at my dining room table and I think about my great aunts and I think about my great grandparents. I think about my grandfather and I know that it stopped, that the Spanish flu stopped. So I'd encourage you to look around in your own life. Maybe there's something that you own or something that you can look to that just by the fact of its existence and your ability to cast your eyes on it or sit down at it offers you some reassurance. And as you've heard on the show today, all of those people out there who are isolating with their romantic partners, not always going great. Some of those people are going to be filing for divorce. More distressingly, some of those people are enduring abuse right now. Don't make that single person assumption that everybody out there who has a partner won some sort of lottery or is going to have that partner forever or even wants to be with that partner anymore. That is not always the case. And you don't have to wait for the physical distancing restrictions to be lifted to reach out and connect to people. Get on the dating apps. Get on Tinder and OkCupid and Bumble. Get on all the dating apps. People are meeting. People are having video chat dates and dressing up for them. I spoke with a woman on the CBC this week who had a 6-hour long date with a man that she met online. You can connect with people virtually. Other people who are isolated and alone, they need that connection too. Reach out to them. Reach out to them now. Make yourself available. It's sort of, you know, a flip on the advice. We've turned over, you know, a lot of the advice I typically give is turned on its head. We had Tristan Taramino on the show to talk about how we're canceling polyamory and non-monogamy, except for the people that you live with. Unless your partners live with you, you can't see them right now. That was crazy. One of the other standard bits of advice that we give us advice slingers is if you meet somebody on a dating app, don't have a huge conversation with them. Don't message with them for weeks or months before you meet in person. Establish mutual interest, meet in person to see if they look like their pictures, to see if you click physically, if there's that chemical sort of pull and attraction. You want to determine that right away because you don't want to make an outsized emotional investment in someone and then meet them and find out that they're not somebody that you want to be with, that there was a MAGA hat out of the frame of all of those photographs they took, for instance. But we are reversing course on that advice. Now reach out, connect, make an emotional investment if it helps you pass this time, if it helps you feel less distress, and then meet up in person and see how it goes. We will get through this. This will end. I feel you. I feel for you. My heart goes out to you, but believe me, this will end. I have the dining room table to prove it. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some of your tweets. Shayna Brassard tweets, at Fake Dan Savage, I just finished listening to episode 703 of the Lovecast Magnum Edition, and it is my all-time favorite. So grateful for your vulnerable story and truth-telling these days. Thank you very much, Shayna, for that very sweet tweet. So Graceful tweets, I want to thank You're Wrong About, Reply All, The Savage Lovecast, and Criminal Show for being my strongest coping mechanisms to date. All these podcasts help. I'm going to pay that forward and give a shout out to some of the podcasts that are helping me stay sane right now. Like you, Graceful, I am a huge fan of You're Wrong About. I think I was their very first fan. Longtime listener to Slate's Political Gabfest. Love Dana Schwartz's Royal Blood, fun history lessons about kings and queens. And I can't recommend Paul Cooper's Fall of Civilizations podcast enough. Somehow listening to stories about the collapse of other civilizations is helping to take my mind off the collapse of our own. Check all those podcasts out. And finally, Haley tweets, Mom just asked for podcast recommendations. Hashtag Savage Lovecast is mom-friendly, right? I like to think we're mom-friendly and dom-friendly. We work for everybody. Thank you all so much for your tweets. If you want me to read your tweet on a future episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
This is for the guy in episode 703 with the new girlfriend of 1 month who he's quarantined with, and she's hot and she's jealous. Dude, no, no, no. I totally agree with Dan's advice, plus the fact that you've only been with her a month and you are an open-minded guy and you have already made a quote-unquote monogamous commitment and she is quote-unquote your girlfriend. I have to assume that those things are at her urging. And that is another sign of control, is to get someone to make too big of a commitment too soon. So no, 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 no. Enjoy your quarantine and then run for the hills.
Hi, I'm calling with regards to episode 703 about the woman who had a question about how to deal with razor burn after she's with somebody. I just want to say, Dan, you were spot on. I have a friend with benefits who I specifically tell him not to shave when we get together, and I love the razor burn on my chin. I wear it like a badge of fucking honor. Every time I feel it or see it, it reminds me of the great sex we had. So I agree with you, Dan. Keep it up.
Hi, this is a comment for the woman in 703 who is super worried about whether she could become a lesbian. This is a totally different take, but as a person who has OCD, I immediately want to see if this woman would look into that for about herself, because what she's describing to me sounds like a specific subset of OCD. It's called HOCD, which literally stands for homosexual obsessive compulsive disorder. And the dictionary definition, if you Google it, it's categorized by intrusive thoughts revolving around one's sexual orientation. And it's basically just an obsession over whether or not you could turn gay. And the reason I think this is because the way that she describes being into girl-on-girl porn and like wanting to get her pussy eaten, it doesn't sound like someone who's actually gay. It sounds like she's just nervous. And maybe what's turning her on is the fact that it's forbidden. I don't know. It's just something to think about. And also definitely dump your husband if he won't go down on you, because that's bullshit.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Better yet, record your question on the voice memo app on your phone and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Speaking of those questions and calls, we are hoping in the next couple of weeks to do an entirely COVID-free Savage Lovecast. If you have a question that has nothing to do with the pandemic, give us a buzz. Ask that question. It will jump to the front of the line. If someone you love and that you are currently quarantining with is a fan of the Savage Lovecast, gift the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast. Twice as much show, no ads. Subscribe or gift a subscription at savagelovecast.com. My Dirty Little Film Festival Hump is going to be streaming online from May 9th through June 12th. Screenings will be hosted by me, yours truly. We were crushed when we had to cancel our 15th annual Spring Hump Tour, but we got permission from the filmmakers to show their films online, and so the show can go on, and it can go on in your living room. I will be there to introduce the show live, and then we will take you straight to the dirty movies. Go to humpfilmfest.com to watch the trailer, check out the lineup, and choose the date and time of screening that works for you. humpfilmfest.com. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. A big thank you to Lori Lopez Guzzo. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. And I'll be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Downloading. Stay safe.